Accession number 28661, Mr. A. Christopher, Reel 5. Now, we were talking about your time in the Operational Training Unit at Milford from round about September onwards, mainly concentrating on the shooting, you know, the gunnery, rather. Mm-hmm. Now, what were you doing anything else there of note that you can recall?
Yes, I think from memory, we used to go occasionally off in twos to fly formation and then have sort of mock air battles so that you would agree beforehand that you would go into a tight turn and he would follow you around and try and shoot you down. Only mock, of course. That sort of thing.
How realistic was that, would you say, based on your later experience?
Well, I can't say really that it was of much assistance, in so much as that if you don't fire your guns, you don't really know whether you're deflecting sufficiently or too much or what. My experience, and I think most of us, was that when you were following the old drove, which was going quite slowly, of course the old Lysander didn't fly too fast, you tended to shoot him up the backside, as it were, rather than sideways on. And then, of course, you've got a red Vary pistol from...
But, I mean, when you're in these mock dogfights, I mean, was the sort of manoeuvres you were practising, were they realistic? I know you couldn't do the coup de grace, the shooting, but, I mean... the sort of whirling round.
Yes, I think we tested the aircraft pretty thoroughly and were doing sort of tight turns and flip overs and goodness knows what. It was great fun, really.
Did you find it difficult to keep on their tail or keep them off your tail? At that stage, did you know where they were in the air, or did you lose them?
Well, I think occasionally, when you were doing that, you lost one another. Because you were diving all over the place and climbing.
Now, what else was going on? Anything else you're doing at the OTU?
Yes, we did. We did a few cross-country trips.
Anything special about them?
No, not really. I mean, it was all navigation by the seat of your pants, really. You were told to fly from Millfield across to Berwick and then down to sort of Sunderland or Newcastle and then across to, I don't know, Whitehaven and back up to Millfield. But you did it all by looking at your map and I mean, it wasn't very... you didn't go to the Met office and find out which way the wind was blowing. You just sort of set off and sort of, I think we used to call it Bradshawing, you know, the old following railway lines and I want to say where the M crossed the road, but of course the M1 didn't exist in those days, did it? Whatever the road was, A1, I suppose. Well, I think that was about it, really.
Now, and was there any final tests, you know, or examinations or of any sort you had to pass at this OTU?
No, because obviously with single engine aircraft, you couldn't go up with an instructor. It was all a bit sort of, well, I wouldn't say amateurish exactly, but... it was all trial and error. You had to teach yourself, really, how to fly the darn thing.
Now, how long were you there for, Millfield?
I suppose
roughly.
Some weeks, rather than months. Because then we moved, actually, across to... Oh, golly, now, what was it called? RAF Brunton. Near...
Now, did the operational training unit move, or did you...
No. This was a satellite airfield where you actually did the air-to-sea firing. Not so much the air-to-air firing, but... and I can't think now what the heck we used to... I can't remember. Presumably there must have been some object out in the sea that we used to go out and fire at. Because air to sea firing is quite easy, because you just aim your aircraft and you can see where the bullets are going into the sea or onto the target. We were there for about a fortnight. And included in that, we did quite a lot of formation flying.
Now, tell me about formation flying. Were you getting used to it? What were the skills you needed to develop?
Well, it all depends whether you were a wing... Taking off, for instance, it all depends... If you were leading the formation, you virtually had to take off with full throttle. Absolutely. Right through the gate. So that whoever was flying behind you wouldn't have to throttle back because they were overtaking you. It was up to them to try and catch you up as you took off. So that the wingmen had... Because we never took off more than three at a time in a V. I think partly because the airfield, the runways weren't wide enough to do it anyway. But yes, I think when you were flying in the air, formation flying, it's very difficult to relax as a wingman, because there's the aircraft in front of you, and obviously you've got a... It's very difficult at sort of, I don't know, 350 miles an hour to keep dead on. How these display units cope, goodness only knows, but they're obviously much better pilots than I was. I don't ever remember doing aerobatics in formation, but I think some of the lads did. I mean, I wouldn't rate myself as any more than an average pilot, nothing spectacular. Because I can remember way back in America, on Harvard's, you got instructors and they used to do loops and goodness knows what in formation. And of course, that's not as easy as it sounds when you're close.
Anything else at Brunton?
No, I don't think so. We were only there for... It was only a satellite. We were only there for a very short time.
And then did you go back to the main base or on somewhere else?
Yes. Because when we were at Brunton, I think we had bicycles and we used to be able to ride into Alnwick. But I can't remember whether I went back to Millfield afterwards or not, quite honestly.
So what happens next that you remember?
Well, then when you'd finished the course, you went home on leave to await a posting.
Now, what was your posting?
Well, going back to... No, it wasn't Brunton. It was at... going back to Millfield... There was a whole batch of us that were going to go overseas to India. And nobody, I think, if I remember rightly, nobody volunteered. So we were all lined up. And we were all numbered, 1, 2, 3, 4, so on. I forget how many of us there were now, but about 40 of us. And... I can remember this chap standing in front of us. He said, right, everybody will number 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. And then I think from memory, I can't remember whether it was odds or evens, one step forward. He said, right, you lot go over there. He said, now you're going to India. And I was, whatever number I was the ones that stayed at home. I was quite grateful for that, really.
Why not? What was wrong with India? Why did people not fancy it?
I don't know. I think we knew that they hadn't got the most modern of the aircraft. We would have been flying Hurricanes, I'm quite certain, out there, and I'm sure the lads that went did. Anyway, I went home on leave to await a posting, and the telegram duly arrived. Report to 3 Squadron, Hunsdon. And I hadn't the faintest idea where Hunsdon was.
Neither have I, is it? Where is it?
Well, you'll be amused to know, I went to the local police station in Eastbourne and said, "Help, where the heck is this?" And they didn't know either. So they rang up RAF Friston, which of course was very near Eastbourne. And they told us that the nearest railway station was, from memory, St Margaret's, which was in the middle of nowhere from Liverpool Street. So off I trotted and joined the squadron.
So it's in Essex, I presume?
No, it's Hertfordshire. It's the nearest town is Hertford or Ware.
Now, you were joining 3 Squadron, and when would this be? November? Or a bit later?
No, it would have been, I would have thought, early November-ish. I haven't got a note of that. If I have, I've lost it.
Now, they were flying Hurricanes?
Yeah. Night Fighter Squadron.
Now, what was the can you just explain what a Night Fighter Squadron was?
Well, one of the things that we were involved in, and I came in on the tail end, was to fly over to the other side, France, and hover around at sort of 10,000 or whatever feet, waiting to see runway lights coming on. And then the idea was to go down low, and if you could, shoot the bomber up as they were taking off.
Landing?
No, they would be taking off.
Right, sorry, okay.
Yeah. I knew it would happen.
So that was going to be the role. Was there any other night fighter role, I mean, that they had? We're just looking at the role, not your actual participation in it at the moment. Or was
quite honestly, by the time I joined the squadron and became operational, our role on Hurricanes was virtually ending. Because very shortly after I had joined, we remustered onto the Typhoon. The only real thing of consequence that happened, I can remember, there was a lovely lad by the name of Bob Inwood, who had shot down, I'm not sure what aircraft it was, but obviously Jerry, and had come back with his own aircraft, full of holes and oil all over the windscreen, quite a mess. He got the DFM for that.
And what was his name? Bob?
Bob Inwood.
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 And did you know him by then? I mean,
yes, I knew him because he was in the sergeant's mess with me. Very nice bloke. I think he later got a commission. But unfortunately.
What sort of a reception did you... Let's look at that before we go on to the change in the... What sort of reception did you get when you joined the unit? I mean, you know, you come in as a new sergeant pilot.
Yes.
How are you met?
Well, I joined actually the same day as somebody else by the name of Charles Tidy. And the first thing that did... saw the adjutant or met the CO. And the adjutant says, "Right, you lads haven't had much leave. Off you go." I can't remember now whether we had 7 or 10 days leave. That was the start before we did anything. And of course we were billeted in dispersal units, Nissen huts, all over the place. All the
now, way what up. Were the Nissen huts like? I mean, how many were there in there? You know, what was it?
Well, it was divided into rooms. See, Hunsdon was a wartime airfield. it's long since disappeared, because I went to try and find it years ago, and it's all disappeared. we all had bicycles.
Now, so what was the hut like? What was your hut like? What did you have in it? Your room in that hut?
If I remember rightly, I shared the room with Charles Tidy. There were just the two of us in this room, and there was a corporal who looked after it. He even made your bed for you. Because believe it or not, I think we had sheets by that time, which was quite a miracle. and we had bicycles, and you.
So, what else would the servant do for you? Or Batman, or whatever. I mean, if you're.
No, you didn't treat him as a Batman, really. He was just in charge of the hut. He kept the room clean. It was all pretty sparse. I mean, you had a cupboard where you could hang your clothes up in, and you had a bed and a chair, and presumably we had a bath. I can't remember what the...
Now, I presume they didn't put you on operational flying straight away, I presume.
No.
So what did they do with you when they first got you, besides send you on leave? Which
well, you sort of had to acclimatise with the lads, get to know everybody. You go off flying non-operationally, flying formation and that sort of thing. And in fact, on Hurricanes, I didn't do a single operational trip. Because, as I say, we were at the tail end of the unit as a Hurricane squadron.
So they were going up, this business of going to attack the bombers, that you didn't do that?
I didn't, no.
And what about the convert? Well, what about the conversion to the Typhoon then?
Well, they started to arrive in penny numbers, mostly brought in by pilots from the, now what did they call them? Air Transport Command, was it? Mostly female. And we had, because the Typhoon was so new and with a new engine, we really acted as test pilots, because there was a huge amount of problems to begin with. If I remember rightly, I seem to remember reading about, of the first 150 operational Typhoons, 135, I don't think I'm making this up, 135 of them were lost by either the tailplane coming off or engine failure, that sort of thing.
Now, did you have any problems with them?
No, not really. Compared with flying a Hurricane, to begin with, flying a Typhoon was a bit like, I don't know, going from a Rolls Royce to an old banger. That's an exaggeration, of course, but the chief problem with the damn things was the starting. They were cartridge start.
Well, can you just explain to them what that meant?
Well, instead of having the electric connection to the thing to boost the batteries and you started, you fired a cartridge. You had to get everything set right. You fired the cartridge, which blew a whole lot of gunge or whatever it was into the engine. And I know if after the third one it didn't start, the aircrew had to do what we called a blowout. In other words, pull the prop round the wrong way, and all the gunge, white smoke and goodness knows what would come out of the exhaust. And then you start again. And that proved a problem when you flew off as a squadron in formation. So if there was eight of you going on to on a trip, and the CO couldn't start his aircraft, you sat there with your engine ticking over, as it were, getting hotter and hotter, and they didn't like that. the old Napier engine, you needed really to start it and take it off immediately so it didn't overheat. And the other thing about it was, though, in the horizontal position, I think there was only either 8 or 9 inch clearance between the prop and the ground, and a lot of people ploughed in, particularly on landing. Because obviously if you flew a Hurricane, you came in and levelled out and made a nice landing. If you did that with the old Tiffy, if you were slightly tail up, you could plough in, and a lot of people did.
So they were the main problems. Mm. Now, what was it like to fly? I mean, take me through it. I mean, you say it was like an old banger, but no, presumably it was faster.
That's a gross exaggeration.
But presumably it was a better aircraft.
Oh, yes. Yeah. I mean, it was faster. It was more solid. It was metal frame. And it got a bit of poke about it.
Was it much faster?
Yes, I think it was. Golly, I've got all the notes upstairs about.
No, it's just a, it's
I think it was about 400, if you like, from memory. Quite considerably faster, but it wasn't as manoeuvrable as a Hurricane.
In what way? What couldn't it do?
Well, I was thinking of a tight turn, for instance. You could almost black yourself out in a Hurricane, the tightness of the turn. But I don't think, from memory, you could do that with a Typhoon. And, of course, we had, at that stage, boffins from Napiers, and every time you landed, they came up to you and wanted to know whether the engine had behaved itself and had you had any problems, and et cetera, et cetera. I mean, they were the state of the art at the time, because, I mean, they were the latest thing.
So what was the cockpit setup like? Can you remember the sort of setup? If you can't, it's all right, you know.
Quite frankly, no. You had a rudder bar and a joystick and a button for hiring. And, of course, you had, we did carry 500-pound bombs, one under each wing. Because I think originally they weren't quite certain what they were going to use the Typhoon for. Apart from sort of the obvious thing of air-to-air fighting, whether it was low-level shipping or dive bombing from a height and that sort of thing, we did several ops of both sorts.
Well, we'll come to that.
Yeah.
And what did you... Were you pleased with it? I mean, did you prefer it to the Hurricane? As a weapon of war, perhaps, rather than a...
Well, I suppose as a weapon of war, it was more advanced, and one felt that it was capable of more punishment, in so much as that it was more solidly built. Because from memory, the Hurricane's fuselage was sort of... I'm not sure what it was now. It wasn't metal, I don't think. It was fabric of some sort.
Doped fabric.
Mm.
But you're not sure.
Yeah.
Now, so how did you start? You're all test flying the Typhoon around the place.
Yes.
Did your squadron have accidents? I mean, were there fatalities, or was it just tricky?
Yes. One of the fatal accidents was a squadron leader, he was a Belgian baron, or count, super bloke, I can't remember his name now, I've got his photograph upstairs. He came into land, having been out on an op, and as he was approaching, his aircraft it appeared to blow up, but I think it was the fact that the tailplane had come off. And he was killed, of course. There wasn't a lot of him left. I acted as a pallbearer at his funeral.
Now, what caused the tailplane to fall off? I mean, that's a fairly
well,
serious...
Presumably, I really don't know, but I presume it must have been the vibration or something or other. I don't really know. But they did, I think, eventually, after I had disappeared, they did actually improve them or did some modification. I'm not sure what.
Now, so how long was it before you went into action on them or went operational?
I don't think it was too long. We actually, by then, had gone down to Westmorling.
Westmorling?
Yes, Westmorling. And it was a question of where the squadron was going to be stationed. And I think the CO, who was another Belgian by the name of De Souma, he had a choice of either staying at Westmorling, going to Friston, or Manston. And I can remember he went off to Friston, and I thought, let's hope we go there, because I lived in Eastbourne. But unfortunately, because he's on the top of the cliffs there, I'm not quite sure what happened, but he was a bit scared when he landed that he was going to go over the edge, and he did a ground loop and wrote the aircraft off, and so we didn't go to Friston. We ended up at Manston. But I think...
Now, did you do any flying from Westmorling?
Yes.
How much? Was this training primarily?
No, we were operational by then.
Now, tell me about the sort of operational flights you were making from Westmorling. Is it Morling, M-A-W?
No, M-A-L-L.
Now, what was your first operational flight? That, I mean, that's probably the easy way of doing.
I believe that was the first one I went on was on an airfield over the other side, where we went over at sea level, and then X minutes before we got to France, did a steep climb and went up to, I don't know, 10,000-12,000 feet or whatever it was, and we got bombs on board, and we dive bombed the airfield. I mean, we'd had no practice at that at all, of course. So it was all hit and mostly miss.
Now, what do you remember of that?
Well, I suppose if I'm honest, everybody on their first off is in a cold sweat. Thinking, oh, God, what's going to happen to me? I was involved in quite a number of what we used to call rhubarb raids, where you've got...
Now, what's a rhubarb raid?
Rhubarb, yeah, where two of you would go off together in when there was a cloud formation of about, say, 500 to 800 feet, so that if you got into you flew over in the cloud and then came down below it so you could see what's going on and have a look-see to see what you could find, either a goods train, a canal with, I remember doing one over Holland, where you got locked gates and that sort of thing. And you'd see if you could bomb them. You normally...
What was it like flying that low? I presume you were pretty low.
Yes, I think if I'm right, you had to have a as long as the ceiling wasn't below 500 feet, you had to obviously get information from the Met Office on the airfield before you went off. But it was quite exciting. I can remember shooting up a train.